Hello and welcome back to Spinal Cast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today is Dr. Martens. She is a neuroscientist and principal investigator at Católica Medical School in Neurotrauma Lab in Rio de Moro, Portugal. Dr. Martens, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
Of course. Well, apologies for my struggle there in the intro, but our hope for today is really just to learn a little bit more about the work that you've been doing, and as far as research is concerned, and then also kind of get your perspective on global SCI research at this current state. And if that sounds all right to you, I just have a handful of questions.
Great.
Perfect. So first and foremost, why spinal cord injury research? What got you into this, you know, neuroscience?
Well, to be honest, I didn't choose spinal cord injury film. It kind of chose me.
Okay.
So this is the honest answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished my PhD and I was working, doing a lot of years already at the time in Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
And so I felt that I really wanted to change in terms of neuroscience field. And I also was, I did my PhD in Manchester at the UK, and I also wanted to return to Portugal.
Okay.
And so when I was returning to Portugal, I looked a lot of labs. At the time, I really wanted to work with neurogenesis. And I approached a lab in my former institute, IMM, that worked on that field. But at the time, they didn't have any funding for me. But they said, oh, actually, I know someone that really needs someone with a lot of background in neuroscience, especially in animal models and a lot of behavior. That's what I did during my PhD.
Yeah.
And so he put me in contact with my previous boss, Dr. Leonor Saúd, that was only a zebrafish lab. So they work with spinal cord injury, but only with zebrafish.
Okay.
And she approached me. She asked me if I wanted to join. At the time, I took the challenge. And from since day one, I fell in love with the field. And so it started like that.
Well, that's cool. I think that's probably a healthy way of stumbling into something. But you've clearly found quite the passion for it. And that's awesome. So, kind of moving into the next question, MCPF has funded some of your research in the past, and one of which was kind of a project around parasites and spinal cord repair. And can you kind of go into detail about what that project was and how parasites can be significant to recovery?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, parasites are cells that are around the blood vessels. So in okay. the vasculature of your body, especially in the brain, you have the blood-brain barrier, and also you have the blood-spinal cord barrier. And that is form of blood vessels that you have in the endothelial cells, and on top of the endothelial cells, you will have the parasites. And so
okay.
they will
and now,
be...
Just to be clear, yeah. for the people listening at home, we're talking about a different type of parasite from what I would... When I hear the word parasite, I think of like a little gremlin...
Totally
different.
Totally different. So this cell
yeah.
is really important for the structure of this barrier, to the function of its barrier. So it has a lot of, it supports the endothelial cells as well. So these cells that are surrounding the blood vessels. And
okay.
of course, it will be responsible for the blood flow, deliver nutrients, because it will contract and it will also, it will detect what the nutrients are needed into the tissue.
Okay.
So from all of the functions, they are supportive. They have a role in support of these cells. They are important for blood flow. They also have a very important feature for the immune response as well, because they will allow for the barrier to be more leaky or not, depending what the system needs.
Okay.
And nowadays, we even know they can also have a metabolic role. And so this is important for the homeostasis, right? In the healthy brain, in the healthy central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
When you have an injury, particularly in the spinal cord injury, what you will affect if you are mainly looking at a traumatic spinal cord injury is that you'll affect and disrupt these vessels.
Okay.
Because you'll have disruption of the vasculature and all of the cells that are the structure of the vessels, they are the structure of the blood spinal cord barrier will be dysfunctional, and parasites will be one of those. So will be if dysfunctional, they will impair the function of the barrier will be leaky, but they also have another important role in the formation of the scar. So I don't know how, if everyone knows, but after an injury, you have then the development of scar tissue, fibrous tissue, that is completely inhibitory for axonal regeneration, right? And parasites, actually, after the injury, they will detach from the blood vessels, almost like migrating and proliferating, and they will also be important for the fibrotic tissue to be formed. So they have a dual role here. They could be benefit, and you can, if you manipulate them, or if in the homeostasis, they will actually need it for a very important leakiness of the barrier, integrity of the barrier. And after the injury, they will also have a role in the injury pathology, in the formation of the scar tissue.
Got it. So just a quick question on that. So if these, you know, parasites that are normally on the vessel and kind of protecting that, if scar tissue is, you know, developing and they move over there, does that leave the vessel like at higher risk?
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. So they don't regenerate or create a secondary, you know, team member or whatever who goes off.
Yeah, that happens as well. So a lot after an injury, you'll also have a period where you have a lot of angiogenesis. And so you have formation of new vessels.
Okay.
So endothelial cells and new parasites. But the issue is that we still are not sure if the ones that are being formed will be functional at all. And if they are a little bit functional, they probably will not be exactly the same as before they were there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that ratio of healthy parasites versus the ones that are detached from the blood vessels and will have a dysfunctional role is probably not balanced.
Right.
So that is something that probably in the future should be changed.
Right. And are parasites able to... I guess what I would call a transition multiple times. So after the scar is formed, do they move back to the vessel or not?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
As soon as they, like, the scar tissue that is our, like, the black hole, right, in the field, because as soon as you got there in the situation, if you have a scar, it's very difficult to, of course, there is people that already show that you can, like, clear a little bit of the scar and delete some of the features of the scar, but particularly for the parasite, there are already studies that have demonstrated that you can deplete them, but the ones that are in the scar, you cannot, like, move them around.
Right. They don't come back.
No.
Interesting.
Or at least so far, we haven't seen that.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. So in your research, at least in my notes here, you identified, is it MyLip-expressing parasites?
Yeah.
And so, like, what is, that's a term that is, you know, foreign to me. So what does that mean? And, you know, how are those introduced after injury? Or so have we already kind of talked about it?
No, not yet. So because
okay.
It's new, okay? So this is a protein. So first we've identified it as a gene expression. What we found is that after the injury, this gene was upregulated only after the injury in parasites, okay?
Mm.
And in particular space in the spinal cord. So this was very predominant on the caudal side of the lesion, in parasites that are surrounding the lesion on the caudal side of the lesion. And it was
when you say caudal side, what is it?
So if you take out the spinal, well, we work with the animal model that is the mouse.
Okay.
Right? And if you take the spinal cord, the rostral will be close to the brain.
Okay.
And the caudal will be the more lumbar region.
Got it.
And so if you lesion it, and we lesion it at the thoracic T9 level,
mm-hmm.
and what we found with our data and our studies is that after the injury, if you look at the vasculature, what we identified is that the parasites, so the vessels that are surrounding the lesion, but more in the caudal side, will start to overexpress MyLip. And this was compared with controls, with animals that didn't have any lesion. And you don't detect MyLip or at all in the parasite.
Mm.
But as soon as you give the insult, as soon as you injure the spinal cord, they goes like, whoop, up.
Right.
Okay. And so remind me what your question was. Sorry, again.
Well, just kind of, you know, I guess you identified that they kind of come after the injury.
Yeah,
but what does that discovery kind of lead to?
Exactly. So this was the first time that we identified this protein as being injury-induced in vascular cells after the injury. So this has already been shown, for instance, being associated in Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
It's also been associated with cancer. for instance, parasites from brain tumors already been shown to express MyLEAP in the brain of Alzheimer's animal models. You also have an overexpression of MyLEAP, although they don't identify the source.
Mm-hmm.
But what you see is that they have different outcomes. So, for instance, in Alzheimer's disease, it shows to be really inhibitory for axonal and neuritic growth. In tumors, it's also been related with the prognosis of that tumor. So it always associated with a very detrimental effect.
Mm.
In spinal cord injury, is everything new for us because it has a, is a, if you just look at the function of this protein in the cell, is really well known, for instance, in liver, because it really controls, for instance, cholesterol metabolism.
Oh, okay.
That is nothing to do with whatever we are talking here now, right?
Right.
But nowadays, with our data, we actually believe that it can also have, because I mentioned to you that parasites can also have a metabolic role. So we believe that this protein can also have that kind of function being overexpressed by these parasites after the injury. And what we observe is that these parasites that overexpress MyLEAP not only are the ones that are attached to the blood vessels, but are also the ones that are detached from the blood vessels, meaning they can also being a way to identify the parasites that will probably be detached and be participating in the scar formation.
Got it.
So exactly what MyLEAP is going to do in the parasite, this is our million-dollar question. That is what we are trying to answer at the moment.
Yeah. I was just going to say, because, you know, it sounds, it's very interesting that it's brought on by all these different things and the fact that you see it in these other forms of research. So the body is obviously creating these expressions of MyLEAP, but you don't really have an understanding of why.
Why
is the body creating this and in these different scenarios? And
yeah
that's that's a question that I don't envy trying to answer, because that sounds outrageously complicated.
But that is why it's cool.
Fair enough.
But we also, if I can share with you, is that we also have data now that is showing us that the expression is transient.
Mm.
So it looks like it's a very particular time where these parasites start to overexpress this protein. We still don't understand if it's like a mechanism of saying, I'm going to be bad, so I'll be detaching from the blood vessels and I will enter in the scar.
Yeah.
Or is a way of screaming for help. I need help from my neighboring cells, like endothelial cells and astrocytes that are inside of the barrier. But what we know is this is very clear, it's very robust data, is that it's very transient. So we are also trying to understand why.
Right. Why being so, it's like finicky, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mentioned that MyLEAP is kind of associated with a lot of kind of negative repercussions or aftermaths. I guess my question is, has there been any research or findings that MyLEAP is valuable in any way? Or is that...
Exactly. Yeah. So, like I said to you, there's a lot of studies if you go into the literature, because MyLEAP also is known as IDOL.
Okay.
And a lot of metabolism studies, and especially in the liver and hepatocytes, in cholesterol, in diabetes, you will identify it and you will see this protein being studied and you will read about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually has a role in maintaining the cholesterol levels inside and outside of the cell. So, but this is all, like I said to you, is very known in, for instance, in liver. So we don't know exactly in this pathology that I told you about,
right?
What is the role? We know that for sure, for instance, in Alzheimer's disease, if you target it, you have an improvement in cognition and or inflammation. So it's definitely, again, in a neurodegenerative context, and if you have an overexpression in this protein, then it looks deleterious, and if you target it, you have positive outcomes.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, I mean, thank you for all the detail there. I'm going to kind of shift our focus a little bit to this award that you won not so long ago from the Wings of Life Foundation, which is another nonprofit. And, you know, I was interested in kind of how that award has impacted your research and kind of where you're headed to, and, you know, how has that kind of changed your path?
Well, first of all, it's such a prestigious award. So for me, it was an honor to receive it, of course. And it really was life-changing in terms of career as well.
Awesome.
It also, almost like in the field, it says that, yeah, okay, your ideas are really outside of the box. And this has like has a road to lead to translational value. Mm-hmm. I think that is what they normally have or focus on. And so definitely it made me like possible, for instance, to even make me more independent at the time. And that helped me also to secure an independent position as a group leader. That's where I am now as junior group leader at Católica.
Yeah.
And open my lab. So it supported, of course, nowadays we also have, because this is also related with the mildly positive parasites. And of course, that funding allowed us a lot to improve our data and to further answer all of our questions. And it has been amazing so far.
Yeah.
And so as it is really an honor and it's been a privilege to be an awardee from that foundation. Yeah.
So when you're doing all of this, these different types of research around these parasite cells, is your goal to find ways of manipulating them into acting more successfully in the way that you want?
Exactly. Yes.
Or okay.
So I really focus. I have this passion since from my PhD, mm-hmm. and I also work with the blood-brain barrier during my PhD in the context of Alzheimer's disease.
Got it.
And so I brought that little part of myself to my postdoc when I started at IMM, and where I implemented the model of confusion. And that is what I really love, and that's why I focus my research on that, because a lot of we know that this is the first let's say system that is affected after a traumatic injury.
Mm-hmm.
And it also will contribute to the damage that follows. So the severity of the vasculature is being dysfunctional will also have a role on how much neuroinflammation you're going to have, because that is going to be the open door for all of the immune cells that are in the circulation to enter into the spinal cord.
Right.
So if you can act first, as soon as possible, on the cells that are forming the barrier, so endothelial cells and parasites, and also astrocytes and feet, if you can control and act on these cells straight away after the injury to try to restore the level of damage, you will also have an impact on the level of neuroinflammation, of exocytosity, on a lot of the secondary effects that follow after the primary injury of the traumatic mechanical force of the injury.
Interesting.
And so my main focus is to actually understand, if we start to understand how these cells respond to the injury, probably we'll identify specific targets, specific players that probably can modulate them or try to manipulate them.
Mm-hmm.
So to give even more support for this barrier to be integral and to be functional again.
Right.
And so that is the main focus.
What I find so interesting about the research itself is, I don't know the best way of wording this, but it sounds like a lot of the research that I talk about with other researchers is a lot of kind of additions. We're bringing something into the mix, and mm-hmm. we want to, you know, it's basically like building a solution. Whereas what I like about your research is it sounds like you're kind of coming in and assessing what's already there.
Exactly.
And using that to your advantage. And so like instead of building a house from scratch, you're finding a foundation that already exists somewhere and kind of building off of that. Yeah. And helping kind of. And that's interesting because I think a lot of the research starts from zero and goes to, you know, a full thing. But you're kind of leveraging the human body and what it already does to try and because it's clearly trying to do something at the point of injury. And so finding out how we can assist that is really what you're doing. And that's super cool.
Thank you. And also it's that I feel and I felt, and it's why I kept focused on this, is that a lot of the field is focusing on the glial cells, neuronal cells, how we can improve axonal regeneration. But it's like I said, if this is the first thing that is going to be affected, we should focus on other types of cells than just glial neuronal cells.
Right.
And these are the cells that are the ones that are forming the barrier. And I think that we need to change it. That's why I keep thinking that this is almost like an outside of the box strategy. But if we identified how we can help these cells to function, all of the what it follows could also be improved.
Exactly.
And it will be a very smooth way to help the system instead of just like finding some. I'm not saying that other the field, the other researchers are doing wrong, okay? I'm just saying that I think it's something that we need to think the other way.
Yeah, well, and what your work is supporting their work too, right? So like definitely. Whatever you do, if you're able to make those cells work more properly, their cells then can work better based on those cells. So yeah, I think it stacks naturally.
And also because we believe, I think that we need to find different things, different answers, because this will be is a multi-disorder, right? It has different outcomes, affects a variety of different cells. So if we just focus on one particular thing, we'll not achieve what we want. So I think that if we all look for different topics and different cells and different targets, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, and if then we combine them, we're probably going to achieve greatness.
Yeah, I love that. Well, speaking of other types of research, I have in my notes here that you did some studies that examined the vascular transcriptome. Yeah. Okay. Some of these science words are just tough on me today. But what were your findings there? And can you explain kind of what those are?
Exactly. So this is how it all started during my postdoc.
Okay.
Is that I had this the idea where we had in the lab, the idea of looking at what these cells are, what the machinery of these cells is telling us. And to do that, we extract the RNA of these cells, of endothelial cells and parasites.
Okay.
And we went to look at transcriptome. So all of the genes that they expressed at different time points of the injury. And this is a very focused on a very acute phase of the injury. And what we found, well, first of all, what we expected to find at the time was that this is going to be a mess, right? Everything is going to be up and down because if these cells are the first targets of the injury, there will be a lot of genes going to be messed up.
Right.
And to our surprise, it was the opposite. It was a very small amount of genes that had an effect. And when we then look at the genes that the top, like, say, two genes that were upregulated, again, we are talking about endothelial cells and parasites, so the cells that are forming the blood spinal mm-hmm. cord barrier.
Right.
And if we look at these two time points that we look at, there was 3 days post-injury and 7 days post-injury.
Mm.
And if we pick up the two top genes, we're exactly the same. So there was no difference.
Interesting.
And this was exactly, this was like, wow, this means that as soon as you injure these cells, the transcriptome shifts and it's static. It stays like that.
Mm.
So it means that it's a very strong effect to be able to, what I will induce you to do will not change. That's it.
Right.
At least during this time point, okay? During the acute phase.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where we identified for MyLeap, and we also identified CD9.
Got it.
There are the two top genes that were upregulated in these cells after the injury.
Got it.
At 3 and at 7 days post-injury.
Got it. So this is that was kind of the starting point. I probably should have led with that question to help kind of our timeline here. But no, that's great. So when it comes to your research, especially with these parasites and things like that, what are some of the challenges that you face getting this from, just lab research to more clinical application? How does that kind of work out?
Yeah, that is one of my goals. Is definitely, I always said I wanted to be a translational and clinical lab as well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that at the end of the day, we want to find also something that we can change in the human context. But what I feel that is going to be a challenge, for instance, at least nowadays in our country, in Portugal, it's very difficult to get on board patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that everyone in the field will say, that it's very hard to bring on board patients. And of course, you also need controls. And at least for the main projects and the things that I've been discussing with clinicians, actually, we are not talking here about samples that are going to be invasive, okay? This is something like we are just talking about blood.
Right.
But even so, I found it extremely hard to get on board patients and families. It's understandable, okay? But I think it's one of the main challenges that I feel so at the moment. And it's also because this is something so deep into the tissue, because we're talking here about a protein that is inside of the cells, inside of the vasculature of the blood vessels of the spinal cord.
Right.
So we need to first do a lot of research to understand how we're going to be able to see if these proteins or these players will also be present, for instance, if they will be, can it be secreted from through exosomes or vesicles, or a little bit of bulbs of the cells that will be spread out into the
right
the blood. So yeah, that job needs to be done.
Well, it sounds like you have plenty of work ahead of you, which is a great sign, because clearly you're passionate about it, so that's good. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your advocacy for women in science. I know, is it World Women in Neuroscience? Is that kind of like gathering you have there?
No. It's like a society.
Okay.
That anyone that actually, everyone that is listening to us, they can look online and they can become a member if you are a scientist, if you are a girl or a human and you work in neuroscience. You can become a member.
Mm.
And this is actually to promote gender balance, of course.
Yeah.
And what you also have in there is all apart from workshops and seminars, we also have, well, they as a society, they have a mentorship program. And so I am a mentor in that program.
Awesome.
And I help, or at least I'll try to help girls to become scientists and do whatever the career path they want to follow within the neuroscience field.
Fantastic. And I believe you shared a picture with us ahead of recording today of your team, which is all women,
yes,
which is very cool. Did you want to talk about that at all?
I keep saying we accept men. It's just that men didn't ask to be part of the team. At least so far. Yeah, but I'm really proud. So I have to say, and I keep saying to this, that of course, all of the work, especially now that I become even more independent, is a lot of the work been done in the lab is because I have a great team.
Yeah.
And this is all the three girls that I show in the picture. That is my team, and they are all amazing. And so that they are the ones that make all of these efforts go into papers and go into grants and be able to be funded. So that is because of their hard work.
Well, awesome. So kind of shifting gears once more, when you look at kind of the grander scheme of SCI research, kind of on a global scale, is there any other research lines that maybe you're not as invested in personally, but that you find particularly interesting or that kind of excite you that someone's thinking about them?
Yeah, a lot of them.
maybe touch on like one or two, like that you think are most
definitely
interesting.
Definitely spinal stimulation. Mm-hmm. All of the work done by Grégoire, all to, again, an outside of the box, the idea that let's just leave the scar alone and bypass it and try to help system in another way to promote recovery.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and I think in the future with all the technology and AI and everything, that will be also the future for it in the field. And then there is also an amazing and super exciting project study from a lab actually in Portugal, from Dr. Monica Souza at I3S in Porto. That she already demonstrated there are other mammals that can actually regenerate their spinal cord.
Mm.
And her work with Acomys, that is the little mice that can actually regenerate after the injury. And I think in the next years, we're going to learn a lot from that model. And I think they will revolutionize the field for sure.
Very
And I'm
cool.
really excited about that.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I think it's also good for our audience to hear, you know, even though you're heads down on your own research, that there's other research being done and everybody's kind of having progressions. It just shows that everything is moving in the right direction. While we haven't figured out a end-all be-all cure for paralysis yet, this is necessary science to keep pushing the envelope forward.
Definitely, yeah.
So, funding and things of that nature in research is clearly very important. But how do organizations, you know, like the Wings of Life or Morton Cure Paralysis Fund, how do we really, you know, best support scientists like yourself?
Well, that is a tricky question. Because the thing is, I believe that all of the science is needed. And if I assume that the people that apply to it are really like passionate and really like, as myself, I really believe that it will be like them, you know?
Right.
And sometimes it's that a little bit of faith. You just like need to give a little bit of faith to that person. Like for me, for instance, I was starting, you know, that change as well, my career path, and that fund was, both fundings were essential to develop and to further develop the idea, to give, to achieve more data.
Right.
And to start to have even a better story and a road to where it's going to be in the future. And so I think that it's, especially nowadays with everything that is happening in the world in terms of funding for science, we believe as well, like in Portugal, is a struggle, for instance, funding for science. And we really need to believe, and I truly believe that we need to see this as a, how should I say it? It's like an investment for everyone's future, mm-hmm. you see? So it's not just that person, it's not just that lab, it's the all of what this is going to have effect in the future, for instance, in spinal cord injury field or any other field. It's like, it's just that little bit of fund to that person, to that lab.
Yeah.
And how to have a very important impact in that field in the future.
Right.
So I think that we should still, and I think that is a cultural thing as well, that we need to learn since from the beginning to understand, for instance, donations and to understand that funding science is crucial for society.
Yeah.
And I think at least in Portugal is something that we need to change a little bit yet, because we believe that science is something that is in the clouds and you know, we cannot touch it, we cannot understand it. But if you cut it, I have 100% sure that you'll feel it in the future.
100%. Absolutely. Well, I think you bring up a good point, and this is something I mean to say to the viewers. You know, MCPF is really designed to be a seed funding organization. We really target people who are changing the game and target giving money to people who might have an idea that's not 100% proven, but they need that help, right? And I think for anyone who's watching or listening, even if you don't have the money to give to MCPF or to any other spinal cord injury, you know, research firm, with all of these different places that raise money for research, look for places that look into, you know, funding those seed research projects, people who are kind of at the base level. I think a lot of us have this idea of like, oh, I'm going to give money to this research and it's going to some big time operation.
Exactly,
and in a lot of cases, that's not moving the needle as much as going to a smaller operation in which it's proving a new point that no one's ever heard, and, you know, taking it to that next stage so that they can be that big player down the road.
Exactly. I feel myself like that one, right? I felt there was a leap of faith in my project because it was so outside of what people was used to read and to fund. So I think that is showing that it can have an effect and it can have definitely an impact.
Awesome. Well, I think that really covers about all the questions I had for today. Dr. Martins, it has been an absolute pleasure. I do want to say on behalf of all of us here at MCPF, we just wanted to thank you for not only joining us on today's episode, but for your tireless efforts in, you know, SCI research and working towards a cure. It really does mean a lot to everybody affected in this community, and I'm just glad that we're able to bring this to their ears and their screens. So
thank you so much, and thank you again for the invitation. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
of course, thank you. Everyone who's watching or listening at home, if you're on YouTube, you could always give us a subscription, hit the bell icon, know when new episodes drop. If you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, a follow is always appreciated. But again, on behalf of all of us here at Spinalcast, thank you, Dr. Martins, and we'll see everybody else next month.